Welcome to Soul Path Parenting, the podcast that explores how we set our kids up to live their best lives from the start, and how we stay conscious, inspired, and sane while we do it. I'm your host, Amy Breeze Cooper. Have you ever thought about the idea of your potential, or better yet, your kids' potential? Isn't it so seductive? Oh, I just used to love the idea of potential. Like anything was possible. And I have to tell you, I used to work in corporate America in a big consumer products company. And I remember my pride when I found out that I was labeled as high potential by the higher ups. That meant in that context that they could envision some possible future in which I could be a VP in the company. Now, the truth is, I never actually wanted to be a VP. I loved the craft of marketing. And so I didn't want to deal with the politics. And frankly, if I'm being totally honest, I didn't really believe that I could succeed at that level, but they did. And that's what really mattered, wasn't it? Well, my friends, after years of personal growth and development and learning about conscious parenting, I have a new view of potential, which I will share later in this episode, because you see, potential has a dark side. As Dr. Shefali Sabari says, it's a double-edged sword. So we'll talk more about that later in the show. But first, let me introduce what this episode is about. This is episode 38. Thank you, by the way, for joining us. And this is the third in our conscious parenting series based on the myths that Dr. Shefali shares in her inspiring book, The Awakened Family. And I have to say, we're on myth number two, and this is probably one of my top two favorite myths. Honestly, understanding this myth has made a massive difference for me in my life personally as a human, and also, of course, in my parenting. So, what is this myth? Here it is. A successful child is ahead of the curve. Now, depending on where you are in your journey, that may sound totally like a myth and completely made up, or it may sound like it did to me when I first heard it, like an absolute truth, like an absolute fact. Like, how could it be any other way? Well, that's what we're going to talk about in today's episode. Joining me will be four other conscious parenting coaches. And the first you're going to hear from is Magali Medina. She is a conscious parenting coach based in Puerto Rico. And in addition to being a coach, she's also a medical doctor. She's an anesthesiologist. And I think you maybe see where this is going. She'll take it from here with her own experience of how this myth played out in her life, in her childhood.
Be a good girl. You have to study hard. You have to have good grades. You have to have a successful career. These were some of my upbringings. Marry a good man. So I marry a doctor, have kids. And I was given the notion that I had to fill all those roles with perfection. And I had to be a good daughter, a good mom, a doctor. So little do I realize that life is very impermanent. Everything changed. And I will be divorced when my child was one. So I had to put myself in front of this new energy, which is my daughter, that I thought she was going to be a little mini me, and she was not. And she started teaching me her own essence. I didn't even know what essence was at that time. I just started to awaken thanks to her. If you see that myth, I was a successful adult. You know, depends how do you define success. But I wasn't happy. I did everything by the prescription. So that myth, I'm the living proof. I'm my daughter. That is not true.
I don't know about you, but I can so relate to that. Following the path that culture has said is the path of success, and yet sort of getting down the path and looking around and realizing I don't feel fulfilled. I don't feel like this is all that there can be. Is it? We'll come to how we view success later in the show. But first, let's hear more of Magali's story and how this myth started to rear its head really early in her parenting journey.
I remember when my daughter was 13 months old, they invited us to a birthday party. And all the kids, including the ones with less age than my daughter, 10 months old, 9 months old, the birthday girl, every kid was walking. Mine was the oldest. She now walked. I had to hold her in my arms. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my goodness, is this child going to ever walk? And everyone was like, oh, she doesn't walk. She doesn't walk. And I knew she had up until 14 months to walk. I'm a physician. I know the milestones. And she still had time. But at that moment, when I see all the smaller kids walking and mine not, it was horrible. Because I was able to compare myself and her. I felt lesser than. And exactly the day she turned 14 months of age, she started walking. So she still was in the curve, but I still remember the big hit in my belly when all the kids were running around in that birthday and my kid didn't want to walk.
Well, if it had been smooth sailing after that, we probably wouldn't be having Magali on this conversation. It turns out that after that milestone, these struggles continued as her daughter became school age.
My daughter, she's attentive to what she likes. So, and this used to desperate me. She have ADHD of the inattentive type. And when I discovered that, I was torn apart. And my inner talk was, will she study? Oh my God. Will she be able to maintain herself? Will she be homeless? I'm a physician. I'm independent. I'm always studying. And the fact that my daughter was totally different from me took me by surprise. So she took a test to start kindergarten, and she didn't pass it, the kindergarten entry exam. And I remember I couldn't believe, I mean, she knew the colors. She knew the numbers until 20. She was talkative. She was verbal. What else did they want? So when I asked what happened, this Catholic school, which, by the way, I could not study because my parents didn't have the money. But I would make her study there because I couldn't study there. So I want to give her all the tools, which is another myth, you know, to be successful. So she would have all the tools that I didn't have and to be maybe better than I was. Do you see my ego everywhere? It's horrible. So they told me, oh, don't worry. You can bring her next month and she can take the exam again. You just pay it. And then I started asking myself, no, I don't think I'm going to put her in this school. Why? So this was another awakening. First, she's going to do what she wants, whenever she wants, like walking. Second, she doesn't want to have to go to the school that I couldn't go.
It turned out that Magali's daughter also had a mitochondrial condition that started to create a number of physical challenges as well.
This is a genetic condition where you would run out of energy if you don't receive certain vitamins and certain supplements. And this would affect your muscles, including your visual muscles, having decreased visual fields, decreased motor abilities. She never learned to run a bike. Her muscle tone was decreased. She needed help when she was in the smaller grades to be able, like, to copy from the board. Her mouth muscles were also weak. So she would drool like a baby. So she was part of all sort of therapies, like visual therapy, motor therapy, math therapy, occupational therapy. I was decided to help my child. She had two tutors when she came from school. After school, she did pretty well.
So this all sets the backdrop for what happens next, what Magali calls her epiphany.
The beginning of her and the pressures placed by me were too much. So in one occasion, she caught herself. And this was my epiphany. I realized it had to be a better way of parenting. So I tried to find things in the internet, and I took my first conscious parenting course. And I realized that even though I was a physician, I was a doctor in medicine, that all my notions in raising my child were not necessarily okay. And I was able to release myself from this huge burden of guilt, realizing to the core that parenting is something that doesn't come as natural and that you need to reparent yourself before raising your child. So now I live in the present moment. I support my daughter in her way of learning. I support her talents, which are singing and painting. And it's funny because I didn't even know that she sings, because I was so attached to the academic activities that she went to a birthday in a neighbor house, and the birthday called me. She was like 6 or 7. And there was this Adele song, and someone was singing beautifully, like Adele. It was running into deep, and she's like, I need you to listen to this. This is your daughter. She's performing here in the karaoke, and everyone is with their mouth open. So I didn't even knew she had this talent, because I was so focused on the academic activities and not in who she really was.
I love that Magali brought up her daughter's singing, because this tendency to want our kids to overachieve applies to academics, and it applies to sports, and it applies to the arts. It is so pervasive in our culture that it applies to almost anything our children might do for joy, and yet it can be turned into something that they're meant to excel at. So when Magali finds out that her daughter excels at singing, what does she do? Well, let's find out.
She even was able to sing the national anthems in her 8th grade graduation. And everyone's like, wow, she sings beautifully. It's hard because society and my friends are telling me, you have to put her in summer camp, in the States, so she would develop that, you know, that talent she had for music. Just like, mom, I don't want to go. I don't want to go to any camp. And I said, okay, if you don't want to go, that's okay. Mom, don't you see the news? Don't you see the Disney artists? How they become? Do you want me to become like a Disney artist? Like crazy. And I'm like, no, okay. Okay, if you don't want to go, you don't have to go. But, you know, our inner critic is always telling us not good enough.
Wow, that's such a great example of the wisdom of children. And it got me thinking, how do we support our kids to thrive and fully express their passions, really achieve their dreams in this hyper-achievement-oriented world? What if our kid does want to be a Disney star or compete at the highest level in sports or push themselves academically? What if that really is their dream? Magali's daughter is right. There are many painful stories of child stars, of Disney artists whose lives have tragic twists and turns. And yet, does it have to be that way? Is it our job to shield them from that possibility by keeping them away from the fray? Or is there another path? This question got me thinking about one of my favorite pop stars. So we're going to stop for a moment and talk about Justin Timberlake. That's right. The answer to this question comes from JT, or better yet, from his mom, Lynn Harless. So let's call this the principle of Lynn Harless. And before we get into that, I have to give you a little bit of background, because I have to admit, sadly, I do not personally know Justin Timberlake, at least not yet. But from what I can tell from the outside, he seems like a pretty authentic grounded person. And I first got this impression of him when I saw an episode of this show called Punked by Ashton Kutcher nearly 20 years ago. And this prank included repossessing Justin Timberlake's cars, his homes, and they even took his dog. And meanwhile, you watch this incredulous 22-year-old Justin keep his calm. He kept saying, "I don't understand," and just kept his cool in a way that I was really clear watching this back then, I definitely would not have. And then, of course, at the end, they have a huge laugh together. By the way, if you're interested in seeing this actual footage, this actual video, you can Google it. You can find it. Justin Timberlake punked. And I, at the time, found his reaction really surprising because not only was that probably not how I would have responded in the situation, being honest with myself, it also didn't seem like the typical reaction of a star where there's a lot of ego. And so when years later, I heard him talk about the early days of his career in an interview, it all came together. It all made sense. And I think this is instructive for any parent, which is why I'm sharing it here. When he was 11, he was on Star Search. Remember Star Search? He did not get into the finals. And then when he was 12, he auditioned for the Mickey Mouse Club, which, as you may know, he did get on along with Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Ryan Gosling, etc. And you know what? He drove all of it. Unlike most other child stars whose parents are standing behind them with some agenda of their own, this was a situation in which his parents supported him. But as you'll see, it was about him. So he was this kid who loved to sing and dance from the get-go. Like they describe him as a toddler who would dance to the radio, who by 2.5 apparently had perfect harmony, could sing in perfect harmony. And so they recognized this passion in him and they encouraged him. They got him voice lessons. They cheered him on. But here's what's really telling about this story. And this is what JT told The Guardian years later. "If my parents hadn't gotten me to those auditions, at some point I would have found a way myself. It wasn't down to them. I remember my mom saying, 'I will take you to every audition. I will support you. But the minute you stop caring about it, I will stop.'" And I just love that because clearly this is a kid or was a kid who was ahead of the curve. And clearly he is now very successful at his craft. But it was all about him. It wasn't about her. And so what we can learn from this story, the principle of Lynn Harless, is that we let our kids drive it. Of course, we can open doors. Of course, we must be paying attention and tapping into what are the clues about what our kids are passionate about? Are there ways that we can help encourage and support that, give them an opportunity to express that creative voice or their intellect or the other passions, the athletic passions that they have? But we don't push them through those doors that we open because it's about them, not us. So how have things turned out for Magali and her daughter? What have they learned in this journey together? Here's what she shares.
So I would say that I've learned that I'm going to forget about the past. I'm going to focus on what I can do in the present moment to help my child. I have learned to see my daughter for who she really is. And she's given me the greatest lessons in my life. And I have stopped living in the wishful thinking of what she might become. Instead, I just focus on who she really is.
I find Magali's story so inspiring and helpful. And I think it's also helpful for us to look at what those underlying drivers are that had us really hold on to this myth to begin with. Here's her perspective on that.
So in my limited mind and belief system, I wanted her to be better than me. So if she was ahead of the curve, that would probably mean that I'm a good parent.
So true, right? It's almost like our kids are our report card, and somehow them becoming something that society says they're supposed to be proves that we're worthy, that we're a good parent, that we get the A grade. And so it all comes full circle, right? Cheryl Polsky, another conscious parenting coach who's based in LA, has some interesting additional perspective to add.
I think most parents see their kids as a reflection of them. I know I certainly did. And it takes a long time to let go of that. Even with my daughter, she was 25 when I really let go emotionally. And also, the parents don't want their kids to experience the same pain that they did. And often by trying to prevent the child from going through the pain, you make it so much bigger.
Cheryl is the mom of two daughters. She has one who's nearly 30, who she gave birth to, and one who is just 18, who she adopted. And she talks about her 18-year-old as her beautiful gift who awakened her. And before she really awakened to all these myths that she was living inside, she shared what that struggle was like. And here's a part of that conversation that I find so beautifully relatable that I wanted to share it with you.
Around the fourth grade, it was more than academic, it was socially. So around the fourth grade, she was losing friends and not keeping up with the maturity. And I really reacted. And it was a long learning curve to understand who she is okay.
Yeah.
And to realize the issues with the friends, my reaction to it was my problem, not hers. And it wasn't up to me to fix her problems. And it wasn't up to me I shouldn't have put my issues onto her.
Yeah.
Because that was big. I did that a lot.
Here's how Cheryl beautifully sums up her takeaway from understanding this myth.
Not expecting your child to be ahead of the curve and accepting them for who they are is really giving your child a blessing to accept themselves, because they need to know that you accept them before they can accept themselves.
So beautifully said. I want to turn now to our third coach in this conversation. You're next going to be hearing from Delia Garcia, who grew up in Mexico, lived for a time in the Czech Republic, and is now based in LA. Here's her experience of this myth growing up.
Well, my sister was above the curve, shall we say. She was the always student, always. And I was like more of a B plus A student. When graduating, I realized that what I really learned is to navigate the system. I was so good at doing tests, at doing homeworks. But then you go out into real life and you're lacking so many skills. How to talk on interviews, being very confident about yourself. Those kind of things that school doesn't really show you. So those kind of things, that's how it hit me. And my sister, who was an excellent with all these scholarships and all of this, she struggled as well, maybe more right. than I.
I think Delia brings up a really interesting point here, which is in certain ways, if we are so focused on our kids being above the curve academically, we're actually training them to be really good at doing school. But what about doing life? I think one of the most powerful insights underneath this myth is the shift from external to internal. And what I mean by that is we're beginning to see that children have been raised, we were raised, most of us that are listening to this, with a very external orientation for what success looked like. And achievement was defined for us, and standards were set out for us, and churches told us what to believe, and our behavior and everything was very much externally oriented. And now humanity is evolving, consciousness is raising, and we now understand that actually the answer for how to do life, for how to fully express who we're meant to be at a soul level, comes from inside of ourselves. And by stopping buying into these external measurements of achievement and external definitions of who we should be and how we should be, we actually are creating space for our children and ourselves to reconnect and go inside. So as we stop and redefine things for ourselves, there are some important questions that we can ask. Here's Delia.
First of all, what is success and what is the curve? I mean, who did all these rules? Who's saying what is successful? Who's saying what is under or above the curve? These are all social and man-made parameters, but do they really exist? It's interesting to ask yourself these things. Something that made me realize this is while I was living in Mexico, there was a curve. And you go to a Czech Republic, there's a different curve. And coming into the States, then the curve is different. So what is really the curve? So it's a myth. We're thinking we're living our own reality, but it's not real. It's very subjective.
I love that. And it made me curious because sometimes I'm really curious about the day-to-day practical applications of these principles. What does Delia encourage in her kids when it comes to school, since she's not bought into pushing them to be ahead of the curve? Here's what she said.
While I do ask them to follow the rules, I mean, do their homework, to have some structure, I ask them not to stress about it. I mean, to see it more like a play, like a game. And, of course, I want them to, for example, I've been teaching them how to make scrambled eggs, or I've been teaching them to have social abilities. For us, the movement part, the healthy part is important as well. So it's all like a balance. Academics has its place, but other things as well have that place as well.
I was also curious to see how Delia would answer the question she teed up earlier. What is success? And I want to caveat this a little bit because in conscious parenting, we're not really focused on setting our kids up for success. It really isn't about telling them how they should be and what they should do. It's about creating the space for them to connect with their true essence and express who they're meant to be. So with all that said, I asked Delia how she defines success for herself.
For me, is to find peace within you. When you're able to manage life with peace, I think that's success. It's simple. And it's hard. I mean, but when you get to that point where things that are outside can go down and you can still be in peace, I think that you just are the most successful person in the world.
Beautiful, right? And because this podcast really has been dedicated to the question, how do we set our kids up to live their best lives? I wanted to get Delia's take on that as well. And it really came full circle right back to the conversation we've been having today.
Let them be their authentic self. They are born. They're perfect just the way they are. And they are born with this light, with this perfectness within them, in their own unperfectness. I mean, and that's the magic of it. So, for example, I struggle so much with Fernando to get the haircut. And he likes his hair messy and all of that. Well, that's the way he is. And I have to stop myself and say, well, okay, let him be. So when you don't make them feel that they're not enough, I think that they can thrive that way. When you make them see that they're perfect just the way they are. And I think that's the problem we all adults have right now, that we are struggling to find acceptance within others when we need to accept ourselves. So if you can just shorten that path to your children, I think they will thrive.
I just love this idea of shortening our kids' paths to knowing that they are enough. And I wanted to end the show with two specific ideas of how we can do this. The first came from Jen Klein, who you will recognize if you heard our conversation about myth number one. And I'm bringing her back on myth number two to share a beautiful and very specific idea of what we can say to our children to counterbalance this myth. Here is Jen.
I did realize with my own children, you know, there was a lot of pressure, especially with the first, because everything's unknown and you don't know what you're doing and your friends are doing this and you're like, but I don't want to do that. You know, especially with, is your child going to nursery school and learning how to read? Or are you keeping them at home? You know, all these decisions that we have to make, I started to feel pressure that, wow, I wasn't doing enough to really push my child to be successful, whatever that might look like at 2 years old or 3 years old. And so I had a lot of resistance over what felt natural to me versus what was kind of expected by society and peer groups. And so for sure, by deconstructing this myth and saying, you know what, you don't need to do anything, whether you walk at a certain age, whether you're reading at a certain age, again, you're still valuable and worthy. And there's no lack in you. There's nothing I need to do to change you. And so I find with this myth as well as really being able to use this conscious languaging with my children so that they can keep hearing it. And you're planting the seed for them so that they can kind of one day go, oh, that's what she meant. Or, wow, this really is part of my narrative. My children know, hey, you don't need to do anything to make me proud. You know, I love you. And you don't need to have good grades. And you don't need to do this exactly the way you are. And so I can see this pressure off of them as well of not having to perform a certain way or to think that they need to be a certain way. And it just allows them to be even more connected to their true essence. And then that allows me to be more connected to my true essence.
I did this interview with Jen several weeks ago. And since then, I've used this language with my kids, this idea that I tell them, and I would invite you to have the same conversation with your kids. You don't need to do anything to make me proud. I love you exactly as you are. And I have to say, it's a little bit like she said, we're sort of imprinting this conscious language. I'm not sure if my kids entirely kind of understand what I'm saying, but they kind of nod their heads. And I think it's an important conversation for us to keep having with our kids. And the last idea I want to leave you with today brings us full circle back to the idea of potential, that double-edged sword that we talked about. And I'll share with you what I learned as a person who was fully committed and in love with the idea of potential. Here's the flip side of it. When we focus on our child reaching their potential, what we're communicating is that who they are at the present moment is not who they should be. Wow, right? So whereas mainstream culture would have us believe that as parents, it's our job to optimize our children, our job to push our children to reach their potential. In fact, one of the most important things that we could do is let go of potential. And I'm going to quote Dr. Shefali here for a moment. She says, our expectations for our children can take them out of the present moment into a disconnected state of wanting to be someone other than who they are. So let's embrace our kids in the present moment and really know that every child is both incredibly extraordinary and incredibly ordinary and exactly perfect just as they are. And so, by the way, are you. That concludes our show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more tips on things that we can say to our kids, I actually have found that a lot of the time it is so much more powerful and important what we ask them than what we tell them. And we have a free download on our website of the 9 most powerful questions that I use in my parenting day in and day out. So visit us at soulpathparenting.com if you'd like that, or if you'd like more information on the coaches that appeared on today's show. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk with you again soon.